The 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
It's being said that the only thing that we learn from history is that we never learn anything from history. One of the exceptions to that mantra is called the North American model of wildlife conservation. The model is a set of principles, which are often called tenets, and they guide wildlife conservation so that everything that is wild and free about North America can remain wild and free for future generations. Equally, the North American model can be thought of as a set of lessons learned from historical events of how not to treat wildlife or people. The model embraces the virtues of imposing self-constraint on the tendency of humans to exploit the natural world. The model is intergenerational, it's altruistic, it's pragmatic, and it's virtuous. It stands for many of the virtues that are becoming increasingly rare in the world today. There's a lot of criticism of the North American model of wildlife conservation. Some of it is constructive and will lead to better conservation outcomes for wildlife in our modern world. But some of the criticism is not constructive. I recently read an article where the author wrote, "The North American model is outdated and no longer an appropriate and workable framework for wildlife management." Because hunters support the guiding principles of the North American model, those that do not like hunting attack the model in hopes that that will undermine the will of society to be accepting of people who hunt. Opponents to the hunting way of life try to portray the North American model of wildlife conservation as some kind of manifesto for hunting. It's not. The model has provisions for how society should govern hunting in a democracy, but the model is bigger than hunting. The model is more than a set of principles that underpins wildlife conservation. The model is part of the foundation of what it means to be a free society. Even at that, there is a movement to abolish the model. I thought opponents to the model were just anti-hunters and other conservationists who cared about wildlife conservation as much as hunters do. But I think I was wrong, and I was naive. I think these attacks on the North American model of wildlife conservation are deliberate and strategic. So we need to have an awakening. Throughout history, the well-being of citizens have depended on a relationship with having access to wildlife, not just for physical needs, but also for the spiritual, emotional, and well-being of societies. Many cultures throughout history are defined by a relationship with a specific wild animal. Model abolitionists are advocating for the dissolution of the model's tenets It's not just about banning hunting and trapping. Fundamentally, they're about restricting free citizens' access to wildlife. And there's a consequence to that. Let's look back on history and try once again to learn its lessons. What happens when you take access to wildlife away from citizens? The French Revolution was a period of major upheaval in France between 1787 and 1799. The Spanish philosopher and hunter José Ortega y Gasset once wrote that after the execution of King Louis in 1793, one of the first things that his subjects did was to go into the king's land and hunt. Hunting and access to wildlife were that important to people. Closer to home, the Royal Proclamation of 1763 was issued by King George III. It came out of the Treaty of Paris, which formally ended the Seven Years' War and transferred French territory in North America to Great Britain. One of the things the proclamation did is it forbade all settlements west of a line drawn along the Appalachian Mountains. The Kingdom of Great Britain tried to prevent access of North American settlers from accessing land and wildlife to the west of the Appalachian Mountains. This created discontent between Britain and the settlers, and this became the first significant area of dispute between Britain and the colonies, and it eventually became a contributing factor leading to the American Revolution, a war for independence. The United States declared its independence from Great Britain on July 4th, 1776. In 1867, Canada gained self-government through the British North America Act, which established the Dominion of Canada. One of the provisions of the British North America Act, also known as the Division of Powers, gave powers to the provinces to have jurisdiction over its natural resources, fish, and wildlife. Access to natural resources, including wildlife, represented a form of power that Canadian citizens did not want its federal government to possess. Access to wildlife is one of the fundamental natural rights that differentiates citizens with the power to govern themselves from mere members of a servile feudal class bound to the land and to the will of its owners. The North American model of wildlife conservation is about power, and it's about citizens having access to their wildlife. Let's examine this claim that the North American model of wildlife is outdated and no longer an appropriate and workable framework for wildlife management. In the model, there's seven tenets. If these tenets are now not appropriate and outdated, then the logic says society should embrace the alternatives to the current tenets of the North American model of wildlife conservation. Let's look at each one of the tenets. The first tenet, wildlife are a public trust. This is a keystone component of the North American model. It's the concept that wildlife is owned by no one and is held in trust for the benefit of present and future generations. The fundamental principle of this tenet of the North American model is that the people are in power and they elect their own governments. And those governments are stewards of the people's wildlife. This concept is embedded in Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, where he said, government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Many things in a democracy are subject to the public trust doctrine. It's not just wildlife. The alternate to this tenet of wildlife being held in trust for the people is that the state privatizes wildlife. That's the alternative. This would see wildlife being owned, the property of the wealthiest people in North America, maybe even corporations. And this would potentially return citizens of North America to the feudal system of the Middle Ages, where people's access to wildlife was eliminated except for nobility. So who would benefit from the privatization of wildlife in North America? The second tenet says that there shall be a prohibition on the commerce of dead wildlife. What this tenet speaks to is that the commercial trade in wildlife is restricted to prevent over-exploitation of wildlife. The fundamental principle that underpins this tenet of the model is that because wildlife are held in public trust, any form of taking wildlife should only be for personal use. And public taking is regulated by public policy. This is a lesson from history about the impacts of market hunting on wildlife. Market hunting was the commercial, industrial scale, wholesale slaughter of wildlife for commercial industrial purposes. This is the meat of wildlife being sold into grocery stores and butcher shops. It's the use of feathers from non-game birds for fashion. And it's the use of animal products in industrial settings. Market hunting in North America is what almost wiped out the bison. They were killed for their tongues, which were pickled and shipped to Europe, and their hides, because they were so thick, were actually used for conveyor belts in factories. The passenger pigeon was killed to extinction, primarily because it was a cheap source of meat to go into sale in butcher shops and grocery stores. Waterfowl were almost decimated in North America, and commercial industrial hunters used a thing called a punt gun. It was a 200-pound shotgun that could kill hundreds of ducks in a single shot. There was a period where the feathers from birds like egrets, used in women's hats and fashion and high fashion, were actually worth more per ounce than gold. The elimination of markets for game animals and non-game animals was an essential step in halting the declines of these species. It has since been held in principle that markets for game and non-game are unacceptable because they privatize a common resource, which leads to their declines. One of the final acts of democracy that squashed market hunting, unregulated market hunting in the United States, was the establishment of the Lacey Act in 1900. The Lacey Act is a conservation law in the United States that prohibits trade in wildlife, fish, and plants that have been taken illegally, possessed, transported, or sold. Opponents to the North American model of wildlife conservation claim that the model only supports hunting. The powerful Lacey Act was a mechanism born from the model's tenets, and it included the illegal harvesting and movement of plants. The alternative to this tenet would be going backwards in time and allowing for the reestablishment of commercial markets for wildlife, turning wildlife into a commodity subject to commercial industrial harvesting driven by market forces. And this is the underlying root of exploitation. The North American model of wildlife conservation saved many species. Commercial fishing never adopted the principles of the North American model of wildlife conservation in that marine fish belong to the people. That was never established. We have the high seas, which are international waters, not subject to any regulation of commercial fishing. And we've seen the exploitation of marine species over and over and over everywhere in the world. But it's one of the things on land that the North American model of wildlife conservation prevented the extinction of many land wildlife species because they removed market forces and commercial market hunting. So if we are to abolish or replace this tenet of the North American model of wildlife conservation, why would society want to return to this way of treating wildlife? The third tenet of the North American model of wildlife conservation states that allocation of wildlife is by law. Wildlife is allocated to the public by law, as opposed to market principles, land ownership, or some other form of status. Democratic processes and public input into lawmaking help ensure that access to wildlife is equitable. Wildlife is allocated through legal mechanisms such as hunting licenses and permits. The fundamental principle that underpins this tenet of the North American model is that wildlife belong to the people, and it's allocated to members of society by the people. And the citizens have enabled public policy and laws which reflect social norms and values to guide the allocation of wildlife for personal use only. The allocation of wildlife by law tenet of the model is more than just hunting. It includes authorizations to capture wildlife, wildlife for the pet trade, wildlife that are captured and tagged and collared in scientific research studies, and wildlife that are managed in conflict situations. These all require some sort of licensing and permitting system under principles of social norms and values and ethics established by society. So if this is no longer an appropriate or workable tenet for wildlife management in today's world, the antithesis to this tenet is that public law and policy and the freedoms to comment on policy and decisions made under public law and public policy would be taken away from citizens. If wildlife were privately held, and the access to wildlife is controlled by its owners, then it's the owners who would allocate wildlife to the citizens. This could be the selling of the rights to hunt wildlife. This could be selling of the rights to birdwatch. Owners of wildlife might hold copyrights on wildlife, which would restrict photographers and artists from photographing or replicating wildlife because the copyright is held by an owner. It might seem absurd, but the abolitionists of the North American model of wildlife conservation, by logic, want the opposite of what the model stands for. So access to wildlife would not be by public law, it would be by will of the owners, because wildlife would become private property. The fourth tenet of the North American model of wildlife conservation states that wildlife is an international resource. It states that wildlife conservation transcends national borders, emphasizing cooperation and shared responsibilities for wildlife conservation. This tenet of the North American model speaks to the conservation of wildlife species whose habitat needs and migratory patterns are at the scale of the continent, which spans both Canada and the United States. The fundamental principle that underpins this tenet of the model is about international peace through cooperation by putting wildlife and conservation first, by taking common goals and values and bringing different nations together for the betterment and the protection of future generations of wildlife that belong to the people. One of the greatest milestones in the history of wildlife conservation in North America was the signing of the Migratory Bird Treaty Convention in 1916. Since then, there have been international treaties in North America for caribou, polar bears, and salmon. One of the benefits of this international treaty is that waterfowl use the North American continent. They're not restricted to the borders of any one particular country, province, territory, or state. So early conservationists, under this philosophy that wildlife, waterfowl belong to both Canada and the United States, worked together to form the treaty. Most of the breeding habitat for waterfowl is in Canada. And so one of the things that the United States does under the treaty, because they consider waterfowl at the North American scale, is they actually invest in habitat, wetland protection, and science of waterfowl in Canada. This tenet of the model is a very powerful motivation to conserve wildlife. And as a result of treating wildlife as an international resource and cooperating between nations, waterfowl have been increasing in numbers. When almost every other guild of bird species in North America are decreasing, waterfowl are increasing because of the North American model of wildlife conservation that considers wildlife as an international resource and inspires international peace and cooperation. Waterfowl across North America benefit both hunters and wildlife enthusiasts and wildlife photographers. It belongs to everyone. So the antithesis to this principle, if it's no longer appropriate or workable for wildlife management in today's world, the antithesis to this principle is the dismantling of international cooperation. Wildlife conservation is a shared value that brings nations together. So how is it better for wildlife to dismantle this international cooperation? How could eliminating the work that Canada and the United States does together for wildlife possibly be better for contemporary wildlife management? The fifth tenet of the North American model of wildlife conservation states that science is the proper tool to discharge wildlife policy. The fundamental principle that underpins this tenet is truth. Astrophysicist Neil deGrasse Tyson once said there are three types of truths. Objective truth. Objective truth is something that is true whether you believe it or not. And the tools for finding objective truth are science, which have been uniquely conserved to seek out and establish objective truths. There's also personal truths, and these are the truths that each of us hold dearly to ourselves. And the problem with personal truths is you can't convince someone else of your personal truth without some act of persuasion, which can take the form of an act of violence. Third, there's political truth. A political truth is something that is true because it has been incessantly repeated. Because wildlife belong to the people, and wildlife behave and respond to the laws of nature, if it's the will of society to make decisions about wildlife not to do it harm, it's paramount under the public trust doctrine that decisions for wildlife are made using objective truths. Science can generate options. Scientists can help society weigh pros and cons of the various options. They can provide information on the trade-offs of different options of wildlife management. They can convey the different levels of risk of one management strategy over another. In a democratic society, choices between competing alternatives for wildlife management that have been generated through science, through objective truths, are guided by public input, which is often comes in the form of public policy that guides the decisions of statutory decision makers, and it also informs decision makers when there's opportunities for the public to comment on decisions made in wildlife management. So when the model abolitionists say that science is no longer appropriate for wildlife management in today's age, then the only other alternative is that we embrace a system of wildlife management that's guided by personal opinions, public opinion polls, and political truths. Let's imagine the implications of going down that path. Let's take, for example, the process of environmental impact assessments. Imagine that the impacts and risks to caribou calving grounds from a major oil development project in the Arctic was not guided by objective truths and science. Imagine that that is taken away from environmental impact assessments, and we establish the impacts and risks to caribou of oil development instead by voting, public opinion polls. Or maybe we let the corporations in charge of the oil field developments or political truths to determine and tell society what the impacts and risks to caribou will be from an oil development project. That would be an example of the seriousness of removing objective truth from a process like environmental impact assessments for land development projects. Would you object to trained experts using science to assess and provide medical care for your child or your cancer treatment? So why would we object to it, to something as important as wildlife? Why, in this era of the information age, would a movement want to remove objective truth from guiding wildlife management? Dr. Stephen Franklin once said, "He who controls information controls the world." Myths and disinformation are the tools of propaganda. The sixth tenet of the North American model of wildlife conservation is democracy in hunting. This tenet states that hunting regulations are established through democratic processes involving public input. Every person in society, every citizen, because the wildlife belongs to the people, has an equal opportunity under the law to participate in hunting and fishing. This tenet might be the crux of some of the opponents of the North American model because they think this is the manifesto for hunting. So to ban hunting, society must ban the North American model of wildlife conservation because it has this tenet that says there shall be democracy in hunting and every person, every citizen has equal opportunity under the law to participate in hunting. The fundamental principle that's being attacked here in this tenet are the principles of equity and fairness. Theodore Roosevelt believed that access for all to have the opportunity to hunt would result in many benefits to society. Aldo Leopold termed this, quote unquote, democracy of sport, and it sets Canada and the United States apart from many other nations where the opportunity to hunt is restricted to those that have special status, such as land ownership, wealth, or other privileges. The greatest historical standing of the public trust is that certain interests are so intrinsically important to the people that their free availability marks the society as one of citizens rather than serfs. Closely linked to the freedom of citizens to have access to wildlife to hunt is the ability to own a firearm. The ability of private citizens in the United States and Canada to own firearms has in no small way shaped the course of conservation and the application of this model. In December 1865, the 13th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified, abolishing chattel slavery nationwide. But since 1865, black codes and Jim Crow laws continued to restrict African Americans' access to firearms well into the 20th century, thus negatively impacting the ability to access wildlife to hunt and feed their families. The antithesis to this tenet is, it's obvious. Privatization of wildlife makes hunting only accessible to the elite. Therefore, the citizens who do not need access to wildlife do not need firearms. Under such a regime, switching to this type of a tenet in the North American model of wildlife conservation, there will be discrimination and disproportionate impacts in society. So why would society need to go backwards in the realm of civil rights to try to create a better world, a better workable model for wildlife conservation? The next tenet of the North American model of wildlife conservation states that wildlife can only be killed for legitimate reasons. Wildlife is a shared resource that must not be wasted, and public laws prohibit killing wildlife for frivolous reasons. This tenet embodies the values of humane animal treatment, sustainable utilization, and the principles of want not, waste not. Wanton waste laws and fair chase principles in hunting are born from this tenet of the North American model of wildlife conservation. This tenet also recognizes the legitimate killing of wildlife for reasons other than hunting, in conflict situations, in self-defense, and the euthanization of seriously, fatally wounded animals. This tenet broadly embraces the values of society as a whole, and it's not just an endorsement of hunting. The fundamental principle that underpins this tenet of the North American model of wildlife conservation are virtues of respect, honor, and dignity for wildlife and for the people that wildlife belong to. This tenet embraces the fundamental shifts in society's views of wildlife over the centuries. Centuries ago in North America, pot hunting, utilitarian hunting, dominated hunting in North America. And it was literally the killing of wildlife by any means possible. It was for utilitarian purposes to feed families. One of the other changes is that society bore witness to what the limits of human killing of wildlife were through market hunting, the decimation of the North American bison, and the extinction of the passenger pigeon. Science started to evolve, and society started to understand the role of humans in the extinction of megafauna on every continent in the world. And that started to change people's values and ethics towards killing wildlife, moving towards more sustainable models, legitimate reasons to take wildlife that weren't unsustainable and threatening wildlife with extinctions. So people decided to impose limits which respected that the fact that humans have the ability to wipe out wildlife with technology. So they imposed balances through principles of fair chase and bag limits that were commensurate with personal consumption needs. And we did that by linking science with hunting regulations, by linking social values with the other acceptable, legitimate reasons where wildlife may have to be killed. The fields of wildlife biology and ecology greatly improved society's understanding of many wildlife species and their interactions with each other and their environments. Through this knowledge, society made conscious choices through its public policy and its laws to shift away from wanton killing and killing of wildlife based on fears and mythologies. So, if this tenet that wildlife shall only be killed for legitimate reasons is not an appropriate and workable framework for wildlife management in today's world, then the alternative to this, logically, is going back to a time where society allowed for wanton killing of wildlife. If wildlife is privatized, society would have no say in how or why wildlife was killed. Imagine wolves in North America being privatized. Imagine the state giving the rights to wolves to a private individual. We have no say in what the values and morals of that individual are. And we no longer, as a society, would have a say in imposing the principle that they can't be killed for legitimate reasons. They're owned by somebody, they're private property. And if so chose, that individual could kill wolves on a wanton basis because society would have no say. Model abolitionists who don't like hunting or killing. The answer to conserve wildlife for future generations is not to take access to wildlife away, including hunting, but it's to make wildlife more accessible and accessible to people that might choose to hunt. Some final thoughts here on this agenda behind the movement to abolish the North American model of wildlife conservation. The model is tied to past historical events, and hunting and hunters figured prominently in North American wildlife conservation in the past. The North American model represents the history of conservation and hunting in North America. The values of tradition, heritage, and culture are deeply ingrained in the institution of hunting. George Orwell said, "Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past." In the book called Mao's America, the acts of erasing history were key tools of the Cultural Revolution in China. To embrace a cultural revolution in North America, history, tradition, and culture need to be erased. And that includes the public's access to wildlife and the tradition and heritage of hunting being part of that access to wildlife. The crux of this story is that the North American model of wildlife conservation is more than just hunting. Andy Russell, the Canadian guide outfitter, author, filmmaker, rancher, and conservationist, eloquently expressed the interconnectedness of humanity and nature when he said, "Every time that a man walks into his home, turns a tap, eats, puts on clothes, or drives a car, he is calling on nature for the means to his way of life. The mere fact that most of what he sees or touches are manufactured things does not change the picture by even a hair." Andy Russell's words remind us that our daily actions, no matter how seemingly disconnected from the natural world, rely on the resources and processes provided by nature. And wildlife are an integral part of nature, and our relationship with wildlife makes each of us a better person. Let me go back to what I said at the start. Throughout history, the well-being of citizens have depended on having a relationship with wildlife, not just for physical needs like food and clothing that hunting provided, but a relationship that also provided spiritual, emotional well-being, and a sense of identity and belonging in the world. Many cultures throughout history were and still are defined by a relationship with a wild animal. Model abolitionists who are advocating for the dissolution of the tenets of the North American model of wildlife conservation are not just trying to ban hunting trapping. Fundamentally, their movement is about restricting free citizens' access to wildlife. Eventually, that will encompass everyone who wants or benefits from access to wildlife. The North American model of wildlife conservation is worth fighting for because it's bigger than just hunting. The model is about empowering citizens to care about the natural world because wildlife belongs to the people. The model is about citizens having the power over their natural world, not governments or corporations. The model is about honoring and protecting citizens' rights to pursue joy and happiness in life. Protecting the model is about protecting each of our own personal liberties and freedoms. This is the North American model of wildlife conservation. It's bigger than just hunting.
Brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV.